This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time now for Green Thumbs in Canterbury, out and about with the Canterbury Horticultural Society.
Green Thumbs. Ray and Lorraine from Canterbury Horticultural Society. We've been out and about in Christchurch this month. And is summer here or spring? What, Lorraine?
Very changeable, isn't it? Yes. Sometimes some days are lovely and other days are cold and
miserable.
Yes.
I guess it's the same. They talk about spring being, you know, one of those seasons where it's one day is beautiful and one day is bad. And we've got El Niño. So we've had the wind, haven't we? That's one thing we've had.
We've had a bit of everything, really, haven't we?
We have. And I look at all my beautiful Iceland poppies. One day they're standing up looking really beautiful. The next wind, they're all crashed and broken because the wind's come through. But never mind.
Right.
So what's happening in your garden?
Things are growing really well, actually. Yeah, the garlic and the potatoes. I haven't really got my summer veggies in yet because I've been busy rearranging the backyard and pulling out things and shifting, and hubby's made me a new veggie garden, so a raised bed. So I've got room to put them, so I hope to get in there very shortly.
Yeah, well, it's not show weekend just yet. We've got a week to go.
Oh, well, hopefully. Yeah. We'll get things in
because show weekend's next weekend, this weekend. So, you know, it's probably the right time to be all ready to go because hopefully after show weekend things will be settled enough to get some of those nice summer vegetables in, like tomatoes and capsicums and things like that.
And your garden's going well?
Oh, my potato. Well, I'm hoping that the size of the potato on the top is relevant to the size of the potatoes underneath. Because my potatoes are going gangbusters. I certainly will have potatoes for Christmas.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's nice, isn't it?
And the garlic. Strangely enough, though, quite a bit of my garlic has ended up with three stalks coming out of the one. So I have no idea what that means, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
When we get them, that's... fruit trees, I know you don't have any, but we had a really good set, even with the wind. We've got lots of apples and plums and even a few peaches, lots of cherries and lots of pears.
Wow.
And we're going to have to do quite a severe thinning on the pears.
Right.
We had a really... I suppose pears are famous for being easily pollinated.
Right.
But, we're a bit worried because it's only a young tree.
Right, okay.
So that's nice. But when you are out spraying for disease, please do it after the petals have fallen off because we don't want to kill those precious few bees we still have.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Have you got bees in your garden?
Oh, lots of bumblebees. Yeah. Lots of bumblebees,
The bumblebees seem to do well. It's the little honeybees that need all the protection, don't they?
I haven't seen many of those, actually, but anyway.
No, well, we're close to the Botanic Gardens, so I think we actually get some visiting bees.
Right.
Right. Okay, so... we've planted out of tomatoes already.
Oh, okay.
Out in a big sunny spot. We're giving it a go to put them in tubs this year.
Oh, good luck.
Yes. Yep. Thank you. Yes. how about your pruning your perennials, like your camellias and all?
I haven't done any of that, no.
No. I know that you need to, you know, prune them when they're... The flowers have stopped.
Yes.
But mine's are flowering still.
Oh, okay.
But there's whole acres of new growth, so I'm a bit reluctant to do too much pruning at this stage. Yeah.
Mm.
So, you know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? You have to just play it by ear sometimes because the plants decide themselves what they want to do. They don't. they don't stop flowering so you can go and start pruning at the right time, do they?
And you don't want to cut off the new growth, really, do you?
Not really. It looks too fragile.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been talking about plants in our garden, but our interview this month is a very interesting one. It's about carnivorous plants, and we've been talking to Brian Kwan from Captivating Plants. So we'll have a little break now and listen to what Brian has to tell us.
Yes, very interesting.
Well, this morning I'm talking to Brian Kwan. I've got that right, haven't I, Brian?
Yes, that's right.
That's good. Who's involved or owns Captivating Carnivorous Plants? I nearly said Captivating Carnivores, but it's not at all what we're talking about, is it, Brian?
That's right. Yep.
Right, Brian, a little bit about your background.
Right. So when I was young, I developed an interest in carnivorous plants and got the Venus flytraps and some Sarracenias and pitcher plants and some sundews, the commonly available ones, and stuck with growing them long enough that I managed to, convince my father to build me a hothouse. Oh. Yeah, that was nice of him. And once I had my hothouse, I was growing plants forever and ever, really.
How old were you when you started?
Must have just been in late primary school, early high school. I think a lot of young people do develop hobbies around that time. They don't always stick with them, but that's when I think a lot of them started.
Well, that's right. And if you've got a parent who encourages you, that's even better, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then I think my interest dropped off a little bit through university when I went to live in at the campus. And the repotting time for the plants is always during exams at the end of the year. So the plants went downhill a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can understand that. So you mentioned university. So what is, your educational background?
Right. I did genetics and plant cell biotechnology at Melbourne University and then a master's degree at Monash University. And my aim was always to genetically engineer carnivorous plants to turn them into proper Audrey 2 monster type things.
It was really?
I'll admit that right now, yep.
I did see that movie, and she was a horrifying little thing, wasn't she?
Oh, absolutely. But that was an alien. That wasn't a genetically modified creature of mine.
Oh, that's good to hear. Well, I've noticed that you've had some quite long stints in your scientific part of your job, which, as we said before, was quite unusual.
Yeah, so soon after I finished uni, I went to a plant nursery that produced carnivorous plants, orchids, cacti, called Paradisia Nurseries in Melbourne. And because they grow the plants so beautifully there, that was another reason I didn't really redevelop my collection at home at the time, because you go into a workplace and everything's just beautiful. And the entry was the dispatch area where all the orchids that were flowering. We'd turn up in the morning and there'd be all the flowering orchids everywhere. It was just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Sounds heaven, doesn't it?
It does.
Sounds like, the sort of place we'd all love to go to work every day. But I guess, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it just didn't pay very well. So so I did my master's degree and then moved to New Zealand, and where I was genetically modifying pine trees and eucalyptus trees for a company called Arpagen. But they worked out very quickly that there was no market here in New Zealand. But we had the expertise, so we were genetically modifying the trees and then sending them off to the North and South America where they did all the field trials.
Yeah, because I thought that we didn't do genetic modification in New Zealand. I know we're going inside the issue here, aren't we? Mm. So we really shouldn't go into it. But, yeah. So just what is a carnivorous plant?
So carnivorous plants can attract an insect, catch it, digest it, and absorb the nutrients to replace the use of nutrients or fertilizers. And they do that by a number of mechanisms.
What sort of insects do they generally collect?
In my hothouse, the Venus flytraps in particular, they like to catch flies and spiders, actually. I think spiders think that it's a safe place to hide, and not very safe. And some of the other plants catch blowflies and wasps. And mosquitoes, crane flies, those sorts of things.
Oh, the wasp one is pretty good then. We need to develop that one, don't we?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So the Sarracenia pitcher plants from North America, they catch a lot of wasps. So if you go into the hothouse in summer, it's not the peaceful, tranquil retreat of a lot of gardens. You go in there and there's always something buzzing where it's caught in a pitcher plant and it's trying to escape and buzzing away. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be quite... disconcerting, I would have thought. I suppose you get used to it.
Yes. I don't feed my plants anymore with any insects. I let them catch their own.
Isn't it interesting now? It's interesting the plants know how to do this.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of places in the world where there's just not many nutrients in the soil. Places with high rainfall or old soil, like Australia has old soil, and the tops of mountains can have a lot of rainfall that washes away the nutrients. So the plants there have to either be slow growing or get some extra nutrients to speed up the growth a bit.
Oh, now that's really interesting. So they've developed this sort of since prehistoric days.
Yeah, and it's developed a number of times across the plant kingdom. So, I mean, you've got bromeliads that are carnivorous and the pitcher plants and some vines and sticky plants and in quite a number of different families. The plants have developed a need over time.
Makes me wonder about in the sea. I suppose this is totally off the planet, but are there plants, carnivorous plants that grow in the sea or water?
Certainly in the water. I'm not sure about the ocean, but in the waterways there are aquatic carnivorous plants. One of the common types is called the bladderwort or Utricularia, mm-hmm. and these have these little ball-shaped spherical traps and with a trap door on the end and some trigger hairs, and it sort of squeezes itself in, so it's a flattened ball, and when something triggers the trap door, the trap door pops in and the sides of the ball pop open and just suck in the little swimming creature.
Oh, the evil little thing.
Yeah, that's right. And so these Utricularias, they start as sort of a light green colour, mm-hmm. and as these little traps get older and older, they turn blacker and blacker as they fill up with poor little creatures.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. That was really just a side question. That's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, the carnivorous plants grow in all sorts of climates, swamp waterways, swamps, mountaintops, and also deserts as well, although they tend to only grow after the rains in the deserts.
I know it's a stupid question, and children often ask me the same question. Do they really have teeth?
Teeth. Probably the Venus flytrap is the only one with teeth, and that's why it's the most famous, I would think. But the teeth are quite soft. If you put your finger into it, the trap will wrap around your finger and it won't hurt you at all. You can pull your finger out. You'd have to leave your finger there maybe a week or so in order to let it get digested.
Oh, really? Okay. Is it like suction or is it just soft landing?
It's very soft. So a Venus flytrap will initially close very softly because sometimes a leaf or a twig might fall onto the trap and it might not be an insect at all. So the triggers inside, the sensor hairs inside the traps need to be stimulated a number of times.
So the movement of the insect will
make it close further and further over time. Yeah.
Right.
So it's just an initial capture where the teeth of the trap are just overlapping, so no insect can escape. And then if something inside the trap keeps on wiggling, it'll keep closing and then producing digestive enzymes. And if there's no movement at all, it'll just open up again and hopefully some rain or wind will blow away the twig or the leaf.
So how often do they have to feed?
They don't need to feed at all, actually. They'll just grow a little bit slower if they don't have enough nutrients. But I've found that if you repot your plants every couple of years, then I think the potting mix has enough nutrients in it to keep growing. And I don't know if it's Canterbury water or not, with increasing nitrates in the water, but I think our water probably has enough nutrition in it.
I think.
But as I said, I repot every couple of years, and that seems to be suitable without having to fertilise them.
So what use are they then? They're not sort of of any use for cleaning up things or?
No, I have these debates or discussions with other carnivorous plant lovers about, well, do they actually clear up the insects? So if you filled your garden with carnivorous plants, would it keep the insects out of the house or not? And we kind of think that they attract insects as well as capturing them. So they probably attract just as many to your garden as they catch.
Oh, right. Yes. And you can grow some of them inside too, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. I'd suggest that they not stay indoors constantly, maybe have a number of them and just rotate them through.
Yeah.
That's what I'd suggest. There are a few, though, that will grow quite well in the house, but they tend to catch the smaller insects. If you really want the blowflies, you need the bigger plants.
I suppose it takes a long time to subdue. When those enzymes will get onto them, do they numb them, do they? Or
they do. So all of these plants, almost all of them, produce nectar around the traps, except for the sticky ones, and that nectar can make the insects drowsy. So when I'm in my hothouse and a fly comes in and is buzzing around everywhere really quickly, it'll land on one of the traps and suck up some nectar. And I'm watching it and it's like, will it fall in or won't it? And it'll often take off and fly around, and it'll fly around a little bit slower. And then it'll land again on the nectar and it'll crawl a little bit further into the trap. And it goes, is it going to fall off now? And it'll suck away a little bit more nectar. And then when it flies away again, it'll be moving really, really slowly so that I can even pluck it out of the air quite easily.
Oh, really?
If I want to, yeah. And so it's when they get really drowsy like that that they tend to fall into the traps.
Is that because it's alcoholic, or is it because it's super sweet? Or
I don't know, but I've been tempted to go and lick my plants.
No, we can't have you getting slower and slower.
I'm not going to fall into the plants. No, so yeah.
Oh, well, that's fascinating.
It is,
I can see that how a little scientific body, you know, 19-year-old would be absolutely fascinated with them. What a great thing to give some curious kid for Christmas.
I think so, yeah. I think they make a great sort of a present.
Yeah.
And so how many have you got yourself in your glasshouse or at home?
Oh, I don't know. Since I've started my little business and I'm trying to provide to Oderings. I think Oderings wants about 1,000 a year, and last year I only produced about 500. I'm trying to produce the full 1,000 this year.
Wow.
And I've got a couple thousand extra that are growing up in trays, building up size for next year.
Well, I suppose that comes to me asking you, do they grow from seed?
You can grow Venus flytraps from seed, and I have a breeding program where you get the best plants and crossbreed them and grow them up. But I find only about half the seedlings grow decent-sized plants, the rest of them kind of small. And
why would that be?
Just a lot of natural variation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of plants, if you grow them from seed, don't grow so well. If you get plants from Kings and King Seed and Egmont and so on, they've been self-crossing those until they start to breed true. But something that's nearly wild has a lot of variation.
Okay, I can understand that, yeah. So you can grow them from seed. How else? Well, what's the best way of growing them or propagating them?
For a home grower, I would say leaf pullings, probably, if you want lots of them. So the Venus flytraps, for smaller amounts of divisions, they've got a bulb at the bottom, right, and so a corm. And when you repot them every 2 to 3 years, you just divide that up and you break it up into 4 or 5 plants.
Oh, so they grow from a corm.
And they go dormant every winter as well. It's very important that they are allowed to go dormant.
Okay. And when they go dormant, do they need to be kept dry or?
Still wet, actually. So I tend to recommend putting them outside in the backyard, but maybe not in a tray, and let the rain just keep raining on them and flush through. And that can flush through any extra salts that might have built up in the pot from our water supply. And then during the active growing season, I recommend them being in a tray with 1 to 2 centimetres of water in it and kept wet all the time. They mustn't dry out in between waterings. They come from swamps.
Are they basically swamp creatures?
The Venus flytraps are, yeah.
Are they?
And if they dry out, they will survive, but they stop growing for a few weeks and won't produce any leaves. And when they do, they're small and they take a few more weeks to get bigger again.
Yeah. So they fast all of winter?
Yep. Oh, they sleep, really.
And they're quite interesting little creatures, aren't they, really?
But if you want lots of them, then the leaf pulling. So you can pull off a leaf and lay it flat, cover it in a little bit of sphagnum moss, and you might grow up a dozen or so plants out of that.
Oh, really?
But they'll be very small, so they'll take a couple of years to get to full size.
Bigger, yeah. Mm. Oh, goodness.
And I produce mine through tissue culture. So,
well, you're a scientist.
Yeah, that's right. But that's the only real way to produce huge numbers of them.
Yeah, and true to type, I guess, true as to well, type. Aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. So once I've found my absolute favourite Venus flytraps, I introduce them into tissue culture, and that's what I can do through the winter. So through winter I'm growing them in tissue culture and then plant them all out in spring. And then, of course, as for every gardener knows, that springtime we're all very, very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then deliveries in early summer.
Oh, wow. Mm. Well, I know Venus flytraps are the ones that we probably all know the best because, you know, they've been the favourite of children for a while. But are they the only ones we grow in New Zealand or that grow in New Zealand?
There's quite a lot that grow in New Zealand. A lot of the others, though, you'll need a hothouse or an indoor terrarium to grow them really well.
Yeah.
So we were speaking earlier about the Nepenthes, the vine-growing pitcher plants that you can sometimes get hardware stores, and they hang their little cups that have got some digestive fluids in them. Those Nepenthes, you can hang them maybe by a sink in the kitchen or in the bathroom, someplace where there's just a bit of extra moisture in the air. And if you have a spray bottle, you can give them a bit of a spray.
All right, yeah.
So they can grow quite well in those conditions. They don't like strong light because they grow in jungles.
Yes.
And but they certainly don't like any frost or any cooler temperatures. No. So in the house,
what about ones that aren't frost? No, that aren't frost tender. Do we have other ones in New Zealand?
There's a bunch of other plants that grow around where the Venus flytrap comes from. There's sundews, which are sticky, and insects can stick to them.
Yeah.
And then they fold over slowly over the insect, cover them in loads of goo, then secrete the digestive enzymes.
Yeah.
There's a number of those that can go dormant if you want to keep them outdoors, or can stay growing all year round if you want to grow them indoors. And my favourite is the cobra lily, Darlingtonia. It looks like a rearing cobra with these a forked tongue.
Oh, really?
Yep. And the forked tongue has the nectar on it. So since it comes along and lands on that, and it's got this mouth above the forked tongue, and there's all these little windows above at the top. So they go up, they see all this light up the top, and as you know, a fly, when it sees a window, it just goes straight to it, bangs around inside the head of the cobra lily, and then falls down the trap where it gets caught.
Wow. Look, they're cunning creatures, aren't they?
Mm.
Now, I'm really fascinated. I know we're running a bit short on time here, Brian, but never mind. They have something magic or something different in the Auckland Botanic Gardens that does something fabulous every now and then. Do you know what that one is?
That was the stink lily, wasn't it?
The smells stink lily, like that's right.
Rotting meat.
Is that a carnivorous plant?
No, it's not. Oh. No. That's the Amorpha phallus titanum, I believe, and it gets pollinated through flies. So it stinks like rotting meat and attracts the flies, and the flies do the pollinating instead of
bees. So blowflies come to those ones, do they?
That's right.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I've always been fascinated by them, yes.
Have you got one?
Not yet. I'm hoping to get a much smaller species called Amorphophallus konjac, and that's used by, I think, farmers in Thailand and Vietnam as a food source. I don't think I'd want to be farming those, considering the smell. Maybe one in the backyard would do for me.
Yes.
But you can eat the tuber, apparently.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, really? Is that right? I was sort of thinking when I knew I was talking to you that what are the famous ones that you know about internationally? I think the big pitcher plants that you see, you know, when you're in Malaysia and, they grow in the jungle and things. And also, they have this big statue in the middle of Kuala Lumpur was all made of, pitcher plants. But also that stinky one, I thought, maybe that's a carnivorous plant, but it's definitely not. Well, I'd love to sit here talking to you for another hour, Brian. It was so interesting. really. Where can you buy them if you want to buy one?
Right, so I'm supplying Venus flytraps to Odorings, and they should turn up there later this month, definitely by early December.
Yeah.
And but most of the other plants that I've got, I just sell on Trade Me, or there's a couple of carnivorous plant Facebook pages for New Zealand, New Zealand Carnivorous Plants and Carnivorous Plants NZ.
Okay, so people could look on there want to get sundews or any of them, face one or something like that.
Absolutely.
And they have photos so people can identify, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah, that's great. And, of course, you're doing a course at the Horticultural Society.
Oh, that's right, yes. Everybody, so many people think that Venus flytraps are only short-lived plants, but they should be able to live for years and years and years and years. And if you grow them well, you can divide them up and give them away to your friends and hopefully everyone can have Venus flytraps that will actually stay alive. And catch insects.
Oh, so you're going to teach people about it.
Right.
So, that's great. Well, if people, we'll talk about this later on to give people details of how to get into their course. But after listening to you, they must be interested. It's so fascinating.
I hope so, yeah. And I hope people can grow Venus flytraps, because once they can grow those, my aim is to try to expand people's interests and grow a range of carnivorous plants.
It would be a good idea to, I can imagine having a few in the garden and just watching what they actually do.
Yes.
Yeah. A bit like the hedgehog. You don't have snails if you have a hedgehog.
Oh, absolutely. I know. There's, yes.
So maybe if you don't want flies, too many flies, have some Venus flytraps.
Yep.
You never know, do you?
No.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, Brian. Very, very interesting. So I'm looking forward to hearing how the course goes.
Okay, thanks, Ray.
Right, well, wasn't he interesting?
Oh, very. Amazing what plants do, isn't it?
Oh, Absolutely. Yeah. A whole different kingdom, isn't it?
Oh, you know? It is.
We talk about the animal kingdom. Well, there's certainly a plant kingdom.
There is, for sure.
But if anybody's really interested, and it's certainly something that's worthwhile doing, if you've got children with a scientific bend to their minds, is that the Horticulture Society is hosting Brian at a workshop on the 22nd of November. And I think it's only $27 or something. So have a look online at the Horticulture Society and you'll go home with some carnivorous plants
to start off your collection.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there's a number of really lovely Christmas workshops coming up. There's sort of rustic wreaths, making wreaths out of vine cuttings, grapevine cuttings. And that's on the 29th of November. And then you can make yourself a Christmas terrarium to put in the middle of the Christmas table. And that's on the 21st of November. No, the 5th of December. So two quite interesting and different things to do for Christmas. Once again, go to the Canterbury Horticultural Society website and you can see those. There's also, if you want to learn how to organically grow chilies and peppers, there's a course on that on the 21st of November. And you can go and watch a demonstration of how to put your lovely hanging baskets together. There's quite a skill in that.
There is, yes. Yes, you can. I have done it myself and it was amazing. Yes. I can't quite do it like she did, but anyway.
I know, they're very clever how they get it in there.
And they get so many plants in
And you get that beautiful ball of bright flowers and some lovely, really lots of really ideas of the plants to use.
Yes.
Is the value of that that workshop, yes. Or it's actually a demonstration, not a workshop. So we've scurried through this month because, I don't know, life's getting a bit breathless, isn't it, with coming up to Christmas?
I know. It seems to be on, well, I feel like I'm on a treadmill.
Yeah.
You know, it's going quite fast.
Yeah. Well, it's good.
It is good. Yeah,
It's good to be busy. And I'm so pleased to see the garden. I thought after winter, this garden's never going to look any good. And suddenly it's starting to, come to life. So,
You
know, and one thing about it, we need to enjoy the garden, not worry about doing things at the right time.
Right.
You know, just enjoy them.
Yeah. And the garden will let you know anyway, won't it?
Well, listen, plants survive without humans for long, long times.
So, oh, right.
You know, they are pretty hardy.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, if anybody would like to suggest anything they'd like to learn about or find out about or ask a question, just send in to info@plainsfm.org.nz or give a call to the office on 365 7997. And I'll see you in December.
Oh, definitely.